time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is the tampering. This is the transfer portal. This is the NIL. All they care about is cash. There's no loyalty anymore. What the hell is this?
Russ Gellinger.
And I just, again, I was waiting for the bombshell, specifically the medical injury bombshell. There's no specifics there around that. And there should have been.
And SI's Pat Forty.
They got the women's tees, the regular men's tees, the back tees, and then the deer leader tees that happen to be 8 feet from the green.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Last week, Colorado enters the transfer portal. Besides, next year it'll head to the Big 12. That leaves 9 schools in the Pac-12. We discussed this and said, will anything happen over the weekend? Nothing did. Obviously, all eyes, I think, are on the University of Arizona. Seems like the next most likely domino to move. Would they jump to the Big 12 now? Are they going to wait? Do they have to take Arizona State with them? I learned that Arizona and Arizona State share a board of trustees. So I don't know if that makes it easier or harder if only one were to go. Or do you have to take them both? Wouldn't it be smart to take them both? I don't know. But that is the question. We have the Pac-9 coming. We have the Big 13. what is next? And is anything imminent? Are we still just Colorado just jumped and may have buyer's remorse at some point? Pat, what are you hearing?
I think whatever's going to happen will probably happen relatively quickly. I think the Big 12 feeling the momentum from getting Colorado is kind of putting a little bit of pressure here on. Like, hey, you know, you want to join a winner? Or do you want to sit there and continue to wait with your sucking your thumb waiting for George Kliakoff to produce a media rights deal? Come with us. I'm not saying that's explicitly the pitch to Arizona, but I do think Arizona is what they want. I think they feel like 14 is their number, at least for the time being. And Arizona's the most likely one they can get. And one of the reasons I think they are putting a little bit of pressure on the clock was the term that I was had heard last week, was that if they're going to strike out with the Pac-12, they want to go get Connecticut. Not that that would necessarily be a slam dunk with the membership, but that if they need to move to Plan B, they would like to go ahead and move to Plan B. So I do think that there is kind of some imperative both ways. Like the Pac-12, you got to start producing something, dude. You know, here it is. Going to be August on Tuesday. You just lost Colorado. Everyone else in the league's like, where do we stand? And the old soon is eventually not going to be soon enough. So they've got to have some dollar figures and some media rights partners to lay in front of their people. I think this week, really, we'll see, you know, what the timing turns out to be. But if they don't produce something this week, I would feel a profound lack of confidence if I were a Pac-12 member.
Yeah, this week seems like a big week. I was told maybe Thursday or last week that by the end of this week, if there are not figures or details on a deal, all bets are off, is how this person put it. So I would imagine that means that others will depart the league, or certainly look seriously to depart the league if they haven't already. This has been, you know, we've talked about this for over a year. It's funny to go back and think about all the things we heard and read and all the speculation for a year on this thing, and to know that Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov has not, you know, presented a full deal yet is fairly shocking, and probably tells you that there's not a good deal to present, doesn't it? I think that's pretty clear now. And unless something at the last minute here changes or happens, I'd imagine you're gonna see a deal presented that's subpar, and you're going to have at least one, maybe two, maybe four schools in the Pac-12 try to find a new home or find a new home. The problem is, where do they go? You know, where do they all go? That's kind of the issue. But as Pat was saying, certainly Arizona is the one to watch to the Big 12. That makes the most sense. It seems to be the one that they've targeted for a while now. You know, Colorado has shown the most interest in the Big 12, and we saw what happens there. And Arizona had shown the next most interest in the Big 12. So something to watch there. That's interesting about Dan, about the boards sharing the boards. I didn't actually know that. I remember talking to Arizona President Robert Roberts. He was up here in D.C. in early June, and we talked to him at length about realignment and stuff. And he did say that while it is doable for them to be playing in a different conference to Arizona State, he actually called it, quote, unlikely to us. But it seems more likely right now, you know, given the circumstances, it seems more likely.
Well, it seemed to me that you wouldn't do it because you're weakening half of your business. I mean, you know, you just stick them together and they're better together. A, why would you let another conference come in and grab part? Like, you can own the state of Arizona. There's only three schools. I mean, I guess there's like Grand Canyon. I don't know. That's basically two D1s. And then there's the University of Phoenix, which is everywhere, but doesn't even field the team. What the heck? They even got a big stadium. Never made any sense. No. You would think you'd take them both. I mean, clearly they have nothing to report that's good. Right. I mean, if you got your homework done, you turn it in. And if you got your homework 95% done, you stand in front of the board and you present and say, look, we're going to get $32 million from Fox and ESPN or CBS. And then, look, we're finishing up with we might be able to scrounge another million out of these guys. And, you know, Apple might take an extra game. And, yeah, gas station TV is going to show the Thursday night Pump Six special. Whatever. We'll pick up another 50 grand there. I don't know. Right. A free bag of Doritos when you get a fill up. If the fact that they don't have anything, yeah, you lose. I mean, I've been like, this is silly to jump, but the deal ends. Like, this is the last season. It's not one of these, like, hey, in 5 years, I got to go, right? And if I'm the Big 12, I am patient here. I ain't, no disrespect to Connecticut. I am not jumping to grab Connecticut. You need to make a move here for decades. Connecticut, nobody wants Connecticut. No one's sitting there saying, if I don't get Connecticut right now, someone else is going to grab Connecticut. Connecticut is fine right where it's at. And they had no options. So I'm waiting on them and saying, can I get these schools? Let me ask you this. Why can't the Pac-12 get a good TV deal? And I know it's not going to get SEC Big Ten, but they have a bunch of name schools. Everyone knows all the schools in the league. They have big markets still. I know it's not college sports markets, but so what? You have Phoenix, you have Bay Area, you have Portland, Seattle. You have some smaller schools with very passionate fan bases. We've talked about Washington State always drew well. That's probably a lot of Mike Leach and stuff and late night games, but whatever. You have the opportunity to grab Las Vegas, San Diego. I mean, there's a lot that, like, what the West Coast, the whole Western United States is growing. You have Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
I think Salt Lake City might be the fastest growing metro region in the country or one of them. Like, these are booming areas of the country. Mm-hmm. You have these state schools. And yeah, I get it. It's not Alabama. It's not Ohio State. But it's better than University of Houston or Kansas. I mean, why can't they get a deal? What's the problem with the Pac-12? I don't get it. I'm not asking for $50, $80 million a year, but how the heck is this not a viable option? Especially when you own a window of time.
Right. I don't have an answer to that. I really don't. Because I agree with everything you laid out, that you have attractive markets, and you do have your own basic window to yourself in the late night games. And, you know, we've talked about people want that. That's really actually one of their better selling points in the Pac-12.
Especially as gambling gets more legal in more places.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's the gambler's game, the late night game. Right. I'm going to try to catch up or cash out. It's legal. You know, every month there's another state that gets legal.
I mean, I can offer you a couple of theories. They may not be fully baked, but one, I mean, look, there's been, first of all, just some institutional, I think, arrogance involved here of who they want to be conference partners with. And Barry Trammell of the Oklahoman had a good column kind of going somewhat into that last week, just about that arrogance definitely has hurt the Pac-12 in terms of who they want to be members of the conference, and then consequently who you can present to a media rights deal. Secondly, you know, I'm sure there's been people that have crunched plenty of the numbers where the fan interest just maybe isn't there. Now, those nighttime games can do well. So like the Friday night games, I remember looking at the numbers last year. They I mean, plenty of million-plus games there. Not a lot of 3 million, 4 million, 5 million games, but plenty of million-viewer games. But, you know, if you start digging into the people in Seattle are Seahawks fans. The people in the Bay Area have four major league teams to root for. The people in Arizona, same thing. So, you know, if it's just being in that secondary market where the fans can take it or leave it, if that hurts them in terms of, like, who actually really cares about what turning on the TV and watching the games or pulling up to the gas pump and watching them, I don't know.
Well, I think, I don't have a really good answer either. But I think if you go back to the exclusive negotiating window with ESPN Fox, which was last, like, August, September, the Pac-12 had their negotiating window, and I believe they requested an amount that those two networks thought was absurd. So they shot really high, and as you might expect maybe them to do, and they didn't seem to provide any wiggle room. So out went those two networks in the exclusive negotiating window, and I think the Pac-12 had confidence that maybe somebody else was out there, like a streamer, to provide coverage and get the amount they wanted, and just not there. It's not a great time right now to be in the market, right? But people are being more selective. There's a lot of changes going on, specifically at the biggest sports programming network in ESPN. There's a lot of changes. They're being more selective. It's not a great time. So one, they probably shot too high. Two, it's not the greatest time in the network market. Three, there's a lot of other things that are coming open, like the NBA deal and WWE, UFC. There might be one more in there coming open. And so the Pac-12 is behind all of those, and so you're kind of down the pecking order a little bit there. And who knows, that, you know, George Klavkov, we don't know for sure, could have brought a deal to the presidents, like a streaming deal or by a big streaming company, and they shot it down, you know, because they wanted more linear, they wanted more visibility. So there's a lot of things at work there, and now they're certainly in a bind, and I don't exactly know how.
I think,
as I said earlier, how
they
get out of it.
It's like the musical chair. You know, it's Game of Musical Chairs, and they're the last ones, and the chairs.
Well, that's two. Right? All the other deals are done. Right, they're last. Mm-hmm. Right, all the big deals are done. Right.
Yeah,
that was Brett Yormark's, I think maybe the savviest thing he did was to press the pace on getting a deal, his own media rights deal done, box them out, could get it complete, not sit around waiting for the streaming option saying, no, we're going to take linear, we're going to take what's there, and we're going to be solid. We've got it together. Hey, Pac-12, how are you doing? Oh, not too well. And I do think, real quick, Dan, before you talk here, that something that was pointed out last week, that when it was like Netflix last fall, you know, had issued like it was a bad stock report or took a step back, and everybody's like, oh, gosh, maybe streaming is not necessarily the answer. And that might have scared off some people from a streaming alternative. And I think the Pac-12 is looking pretty heavily at the streaming option.
So I do not want to see the government get involved in any of this. But what I would say is, since the government is trying to get involved in college football, college athletics, we have, I don't know, any half a dozen different bills that various bipartisan Congress members have done on how we can somehow thread some needle on NIL. And there's zero attention on this. This is the disruption.
Yeah.
This is the threat to college athletics. It always has been. Mm-hmm. Colorado took an NIL deal and entered the portal. They were tampered with. Every single thing they're screaming about because they lost some freshman cornerback who wasn't getting enough playing time is exactly what they all do. The commissioners, the ADs, the whole thing. You're bailing out in the middle of the night, everything. And at the end of the day, you could have completely marginalized out a huge part of your country.
Yeah.
And just said, you guys no longer matter over this. Now, again, I am not a government solution guy. If this is how it works, I guess this is how it's going to work. But it would seem to me that if I was actually one of those people, I was a senator and one, and where there's no more free market politicians left in America, apparently, I would be more concerned on what the hell's going on here than, oh, my God, Mac Brown's pissed because he lost some guy in his depth chart. This is the tampering. Yes. This is the transfer portal. This is the NIL. All they care about is cash. There's no loyalty anymore. Mm-hmm. What the hell is this?
Yeah, this is hundreds of millions of dollars worth of NIL.
Billions of dollars. Huge, huge changes. Dramatic changes for fans, consumers. How much business does Pullman, Washington get, or any bar near camp, any hotel near any of these campuses, because they're in major college sports, and all of a sudden, sorry, not anymore. Like, this is the threat. Expansion has caused more problems. Now, it'll also give us more good games and all that, and I'm okay with it. I think it sucks, but I'm not calling for Joe Manchin and Tuberville and all these guys, but they're concerned about the wrong guy. They're worried about one dude somewhere instead of entire institutions. Like, you know, and so it's like, what are we doing? Why is this okay? And that isn't. Because I'll go back and look. Like, if anyone at the University of Colorado was complaining about NIL and the transfer portal and then pulled this stunt. I'm in a meeting, everything's good. And I walk out the meeting, like, we're gone.
Yeah. Hey, Colorado AD Rick George is on the NIL working group. Was one of the leaders NIL working group.
Come on. Yeah. And they're lobbying Tommy Tuberville to we need a 3-year. You got to stay 3 years and you can't transfer for 3 years. The guy left a recruit and his parents at dinner, walked out of a dinner to take another job. Like, Rick George, I mean, come on. How do you with a straight face go, it's the same thing, but this is much more important.
It is. Absolutely. Oh, that's college sports, man. The ingrained temptation to curtail the students, you know, where the adults then just can absolutely run amok and do whatever the hell they like.
Yeah.
And chase the dollars. That's all this, you know, that's when I changed my whole mind back in 2010, 11, 12 about a scholarship being enough and starting to pay the players, was when it's obvious that this is all just a money grab. And if it's a money grab for the institutions, then it should be a money grab for the players too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they acknowledge it too. They acknowledge that it's about the money. Think about what I was just talked about, the Arizona president who was up in DC a couple months ago. When we were asking him about a Pac-12 deal and the potential for Arizona to leave the Pac-12 if the deal isn't good enough, he said Everybody remembers the Jerry Maguire movie, Show Me the Money. That's what he said. It's all about the money, while in
Washington trying to get a deal.
That's right. We're holding a summit on NIL. Yeah. So it's crazy. You know, one thing I didn't say when we were talking about why the Pac-12 hadn't gotten the TV deal, to go back real quick, the Big Ten deal, which was announced last July, the $2 billion a year deal. I think the Pac-12 thought that would help them in many around, you know, that drives up the market, right? That moves up the market. I think they thought that they were worth somewhere probably between 65% and 75% of the Big Ten deal. I think that was a gross miscalculation on their part, and I forgot to mention that earlier. So the Big Ten deal, in a lot of what respects, didn't help them and kind of backfired on their thinking on that. But that's just something I had.
It took a competitor off the market. It took a competitor off the market.
Three competitors.
Yeah. Three competitors.
Right, three. Yeah. Fox, NBC, and CBS. Yeah. And while NBC and CBS aren't paying what Fox is for that deal, they are paying a lot for college football / basketball, which they haven't had a lot of. And I don't think they really want that much more of. So it did. It took away in a lot of ways. You can look at the Big Ten deal and think, oh yeah, that actually negatively impacted the Pac-12. And then of course you lump in USC and UCLA's loss of value from the Pac-12 and gain of value in the Big Ten. And there you go.
Yeah, it destabilized.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is television networks running this thing. Again, outside interference, third party, guardrails, guardrails. What is Fox doing?
Tampering.
Dead silence, tampering. Well, yeah, backroom deals, the whole thing. And this is the thing that really affects our sport.
Yeah.
This is what really affects our sport. North Carolina is going to be fine if a couple guys transfer out. Supposedly just for the money, because why would anyone ever leave? Or somebody's going to be all right. Oh, this is the wild. Oh, no, it's a disaster. You got to change the way you do stuff. No, you know what will happen is even Lane Kiffin, who calls a disaster, just changes how he does stuff, figures it out, and goes, all right, hey, we're pretty good. My head hurts with this sport and the hypocrisy. I want to get
you love it, Dan. You love it.
I do.
Lots of content.
There's a lot of content. It's just like, what the hell is going on? I don't know. Nervous week out west.
Yes.
Nervous week.
Yes.
And I really think if they just get this playoff going, these schools will see the value of being in a smaller league.
Isn't that the truth?
I've been arguing this since death to the BCS. You want to save this sport, get a playoff.
Yeah, and then let it work.
Let it work. Let it cook. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, we're pretty happy right where we're at. Gonzaga doesn't leave, right? They keep kind of, maybe, maybe not. We'll see. It's working pretty good here. We're good in the West Coast Conference. Basketball program's killing it. It's just you don't mess with, you know. It's just they were corrupted by one industry and now another, and there ain't a damn guardrail in the world that could save the sport anymore. I wanted to discuss this story because it got a ton of what I think surface attention. And this was a frontofficesports.com story about the Minnesota Golden Gophers of all places and PJ Fleck, row the boat. And it was a story that detailed what they called an environment fraught with intimidation and toxicity. They use things like cult-like as a term. And it was basically an expose on how horrible Minnesota's football program is under PJ Fleck the last six seasons. And it played perfectly into today's media environment, which is heavy on aggregation and social media.
Yes.
Amplifying the headline of a story with zero context or even thing. So you write a story like this and every website will immediately put out, will go with whatever's been alleged and just throw it out there. And there's a headline that's flashing around the internet, on TV, tickers, everything about the toxicity and intimidation inside the Golden Gopher football program under PJ Fleck. And there'll be tweets and Facebook posts and TikToks that just brush, that just use those terms. And there, it's questionable how many people who are even spreading all of that, and it can spread like wildfire, have ever even read the story or read it with a calloused eye. And so, I mean, Front Office Sports is not known for its investigative journalism. Now, Yahoo Sports wasn't once, and you have to do a really good job on that to try to overcome that. But it was taken as gospel and went everywhere. And PJ Fleck got dragged on this story. Like, he got dragged. Like, this is a bad story for Minnesota. This is the kind of stuff they have to going to have to spend a lot of time talking to a lot of recruits and their parents about. And I read the story. I've now read it three times. There ain't anything in this story. This is an incredibly weak story. This is an amplified headline and some big words. And I don't know where the toxicity is or the intimidation or any of the other stuff. I read, there are two parts of this story that could possibly be problematic. One is this allegation. They sit there and say, over the last month, Front Office Sports interviewed several former players and staff members about Fleck's six seasons. Now, in six seasons, you're talking hundreds of people have been through the program. And you've talked to several. Okay. And they talk about the environment fraught with intimidation and toxicity, reference the Fleck Bank, a system allowed players with enough coins, basically good deeds, to get away with positive drug tests and other violations of team rules. So that seems to be the most glaring example of the problem. And I read it, and it says, a school can come up with any drug test, any drug policy they want. I don't believe the NCAA mandates anything anymore, does it, Pat?
No, other than at an NCAA championship event, if you test positive there.
You can test positive for marijuana there. Yeah, you got to stop smoking weed before the NCAA basketball tournament, stuff like that. Yeah. And then PEDs, right? But you can, school can be like, hey, you can smoke weed. It's legal in I don't know how many states, right?
A lot of schools have pulled their drug policies, basically. They just don't test anymore. Yep. Yeah.
Don't test. Yep. But if you have a policy, you have to enforce the policy. That's the rule. Okay. So they were saying some of Fleck's recruits tested positive, but he looked past it because they had I don't even know how the recruits, I guess the guys they brought in, had coins in the Fleck Bank from doing community service or staying around to pray with him. He wanted you to be family. He wanted you to do whatever he wanted to do. Okay. So I don't know if Minnesota's policy is you can't smoke weed, then you test positive, smoke weed. It's an NCAA violation. You got to supposed to come up with punishment. However, later in the story, it says a first strike for a street drug doesn't trigger an automatic suspension, although a player is required to go to medical evaluation and a review panel would convene. And then it says coaches, however, may enforce a more restrictive team policy or team rule. So they didn't punish the kids because they didn't have to. So that's not a problem. If you're expecting coaches to go beyond the team rule, come on. All right. Yeah, what are we doing?
No.
The second was the medical staff. There's an allegation sort of that the medical staff would send injured players back out in the field, right? And this has happened everywhere forever, and it's not good. Not good then, not good now. But there is a one paragraph on this, and it literally has no specifics, no details on the accusation. It just says... It would basically just say those athletic trainers did a lot of things because Fleck forced their hand in the medical room. One player said, basically a fourth player said, whether that would be getting guys back earlier than they should or minimizing a series of horrendous injuries. A lot of trainers did a lot of things that maybe they shouldn't have done, even if they didn't agree with it because of Fleck. Zero details on this. I got no idea. All right. But there was like an internal report that said the athletic medical team members clearly articulated they provide the opportunity to perform independently and autonomously as they provide medical care. So the school found out. The school pushed back hard on this. I know I'm getting a lot of details here, but that's all that's in this thing. those two details, neither of which have, or those two allegations, no details, no specifics. Everyone is anonymous. Almost pretty much everyone in the story is anonymous. All the allegations. That's all there is. And yet the story goes on to all this other stuff. Let me give you one. Okay. When PJ Fleck would enter a room. Okay. And I would like to actually employ this for our podcast every time I come on the Zoom.
Oh, God.
Let me just admit.
A round when of applause PJ, for Dan.
Yes. When PJ Fleck entered the room, quote, we had to practice giving Fleck ovations multiple times. He wanted a standing ovation every time he came in the room. First time because some other people in the back were not moving as quick as he wanted. So Fleck would leave, re-enter the room. If he didn't like the ovation he would receive. Okay. Now, if you know PJ Fleck, this is the kind of stuff he does. I find it silly, but whatever. It like I he wants excitement when someone walks into a meeting room, right? Let's go, right? All that stuff. This is not what is this? Is this a what is this toxicity, Pat?
No, this is a coach with an ego who's trying to build some sort of you know, aura or whatever. I mean, energy. It's silly and it's weird. Yeah. You know, but this is not toxicity. You know, that's the point of all of this is this is vaguely substantiated, poorly documented, largely seems to be overblown. Minnesota's responses, I thought, were adequate on this stuff. This is not Northwestern and a lot of other things that have blown up. So, you know, that and I will say that this story, to my knowledge, was shopped around to several locations trying to get somebody to bite on it, and most of the primary investigative journalism sort of places are like, nah. And so now it's a front office sports story. And your point about the aggregation of it or just taking it and running with it is really a big problem, and I think it does a disservice to us in the industry, does a disservice to the people who are being aggregated upon. But this is kind of where we are, and it's there are not enough people that will take enough time to really go through and parse and say, there's not a whole lot here. And also the other thing, too, is one of the people that was involved in kind of pushing this out as a potential story last year at this time was pushing out that Penn State was going to unionize amid, you know, college football, and that Sean Clifford was leading the union. Where'd that go? That didn't go anywhere. That blew up. Big Ten Media Day. Somebody keeps trying to make a splash there. Check out the splashes. They're not very big.
One player was let me get to this one, Ross, because it's funny. Because we got a lot of these are funny. One player was apparently chapped at one of so Fleck is all about these acronyms, right? One acronym stood out. Family, FAMILY, short for forget about me, I love you. Okay. All right. So again, roll my eyes, whatever. But I am not an 18-year-old football player, right? This is no different than the team, or you know, everybody shave your head at Marine boot camp or whatever. This is just basic team building. Forget about me, I love you. And again, I think we should go with forget about me, I love Dan. I think that should be our acronym around here.
Famild is not a word. Famild. So that's out.
Famild, yes.
No, that's out.
No, that's in. Forget about me, I love. Okay.
I think you're outvoted 2-1. This is not a Fleck dictatorship.
I mean, all this right. Quote ran, though. This quote.
Dear leader.
This quote, yes. This quote is this something. Quote. Yeah.
He was making us say, forget about yourselves as an individual, the player said. That's true. I was baffled because it's not anything logical. If you forget about yourself, then who are you?
Oh, my God.
Added a fourth player. It was based on Flex ego. You have to talk a certain way. You have to be a certain way. Within the building of the University of Minnesota, it's very much like brainwashing. I mean, come on. Is there an editor in front office sports? Because what? You ran that quote?
Anonymously, right?
Yeah, if you forget about yourself, worse. Then who are you? What are we, philosophers?
There was no reason
class?
For anonymity there. No reason for anonymity
no,
there.
No, I want to know what that guy, that, I mean, okay, you can roll your eyes and be like, yeah, he's got all these corny ass, oh my God, but whatever, you know, forget about me. I love you. Teammates, we're brothers, the brotherhood, La Familia, all, I mean, this is basic stuff.
Every team everywhere has some
and
version
like,
of that.
U11 like travel sports, like see, like middle school football. Let's hold hands as we walk on the field.
Right.
I'm reminded of the Ed Orgeron, one team, one heartbeat. One team, one heartbeat. Yeah.
Absolutely. One heartbeat. I mean, this is all it is. This is toxicity.
Yeah.
This, I'm gonna tell you what. You can we'll laugh. It's Minnesota. If this is the trend because of the Northwestern story, that every school in the country is going to have one of these stories.
Yeah.
Because you can always find four guys.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got
in the last 6 years who are like,
team, yeah.
Yeah, didn't work out for me. This guy's an idiot. Okay, fine. PJ Flex, an idiot for you. He's pretty successful. Go ahead, Pat. I mean, Ross, you're going to say something.
Well, you kept reading the story and kind of waiting for a bombshell of some sort. something to raise my eyebrows, something similar to Northwestern or any of the other things, Maryland, whatever, that have happened. And there was really just no huge bombshell in there. And one of the issues, and Dan, you mentioned it, is the biggest, you know, issue in the story was this suggestion, right, that injured players are made to return, which we all do know happens everywhere and is an issue in probably needs to stop and is being curtailed, I think, mostly, but still exists. But there was no specifics there. There was no
right.
There was no reporting around it. Like, what were the specifics of the injury? Who were the players? In what way were they injured? How much did they return? There were no specifics. And that was an issue. That this story to me could have been a story about, Fleck and how kind of, right, weird he is and how he does have this surrounding cult-like culture around him. But it could have been, like, about that because there wasn't so much serious about some of the things in there, just like the one you read about family would have been good in a story about this weird kind of culture of in general football and football coaches and how PJ Fleck represents one of the ones that is the most kind of cult-like or whatever you want to call it. But it could have been just more overarching story about how weird college football coaches can be, right? And instead it kind of was made to be this like you said, this toxic story where at the end of the story, I'm thinking this literally could be written about half of the college football programs in America. And I just, again, I was waiting for the bombshell, specifically the medical injury bombshell. There's no specifics there around that. And there should have been.
There's not even an allegation. It's just, well, I think they kind of did some stuff. Okay. If Fleck asked, a player or Fleck asked anyone, how are you doing? You're supposed to respond, I'm elite. Okay. Right. Okay. Again, roll your eyes or not. It was sickening because I wasn't okay. I wasn't in a good mental spot. I was struggling. I was fighting every day to get by or find hope. It's natural to say when someone asks you how you doing to say I'm elite. Okay. Again, they also put in there, they were encouraged to have mental health professionals there, all this stuff. Like, this is just a tactic. Like, who the hell signed with PJ Fleck and thought he wasn't this?
Right.
I mean, this is him. This is him. He is not hiding anything. He's running around going, family, forget about me. I love you. Okay. All right. Just tone it down, PJ. But all right. Players that got in trouble had to do extra conditioning. Oh, here's a novel one. Athletes had to run stairs at 6 a.m. with plates over their head for minor drinking. Run by strength coach, but coach directed. Okay, so are we too easy on the druggies? Are we too hard on the drinkers? What are we doing? Punishments included 400-yard bear crawls, do burpees till you threw up. Well, you don't have to throw, I don't, whatever. Like, running the stadium steps, that's pretty much it, right? You miss class, you're running the stadium steps. This is not toxic.
No. And that, I will say, you know, I think we're at an interesting period in youth sports, high school sports, college sports, of trying to figure out the line between hard coaching and abusive coaching, and what's allowable discipline and what is too much. And the pendulum used to be way over here, and it was probably way too harsh. But I feel like we have swung too far the other direction in some areas, in some instances, and in the minds of some people. And, you know, maybe I'm just an old guy, but I think you should be able to still tell your players, if they are going to be in trouble, that there are going to be consequences. And those consequences may be bear crawls across the stadium or running the stadium steps or whatever, extra running, cleaning the weight room at 5 a.m. If that's abusive, and if that's going to be deemed abusive, then I'm afraid we're getting to a point where it's going to be really hard for people to coach and engage with the young people.
I agree. I just think that there has to be some perspective on this stuff. Maybe major college football isn't for you. Like, none of this stuff raises to even close. You just found some disgruntled people to say you, or you just used these terms. Like, there has to be some kind of perspective on this stuff. Just because someone will tell you something anonymously does not mean you just report it. You just give them free rein. There's no harm here. We just had nothing. And so, look, I am not PJ. I don't know PJ Fleck. I'm not a Minnesota Gopher fan. If this was more problematic, we would be all over it. But this was not Northwestern. I don't see any problems with any of this stuff. At some point, it's just like, just because somebody couldn't handle having to answer, I'm elite coach, or is upset because family, what is it? FAM, what's the
family?
Oh, forget about me. Someone's telling me to forget about you. Me, so I love my teammates. I've now lost all sense of worth. Okay. All right. That's not toxicity. That doesn't merit this. So I don't know. This is a lot for a non-story, but it felt like it became a story, and PJ Flex, you know, all his little corporate buzzwords and stuff were getting taken out of, you know, slogans and all that. So,
I will say the Big Ten and at SEC or whatever, the coaches will give their little spiel at the podium. And then at the end, they'll say, you know, go Vols, go Gators, whatever, you know. PJ had three of them. He reeled off in rapid fashion. Row the boat, Sky Yuma, go Gophers. Set the Big Ten record for most slogans, which is, that's him.
That is him. And that's like what I was saying earlier, how it actually could be a pretty fascinating story to write about the weirdness of his culture in himself. And it could be even a broader story about college football coaches and the culture and how weird and bizarre it is. That's what sure. I took away from the story, not necessarily some toxic, you know, awful, illegal, whatever, environment, more so this like head scratching weirdo kind of culture that is in place in a lot of college football programs.
Flex said about like when he runs in the room and he runs.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is him.
Yeah.
When I run in and another weird thing. I want the cheering. No. Yeah. Well, whatever. This is what he does. When I run in there, it's not about me. It's about getting everyone energized, make as much noise as we can. We clap and I blow a whistle. Then we start the meeting. I've done that for 11 years. Again, I get it. I get it. That's it. We're all, let's go. Dial in. Let's go. Energy. We're fired up. We're focused. We're doing this thing. That's not toxicity. No one was in danger because they had to stand up and clap. There wasn't a naked guy dry humping me because I fumbled in practice.
Right.
I had to stand up and clap for this guy and get going. Energy. And you listen to PJ Flex, all his sayings, and again, I'm too old to like fall for this stuff anymore, but you roll your eyes. But like all the messages are right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like he's asking you to pray to a bronze bull or something. You know, I mean, it's it's his own method of team building and culture building, for lack of a better word. And yes, there's a lot of corning with it, but he's also been pretty successful.
Yeah, it's been very fun. All right, couple recruiting updates, some interesting ones. We talked previously about Michigan and Ohio State battling for two defensive backs out of the state of Ohio. That includes Aaron Scott Jr. I think even Charles Woodson got involved in social media on this one. Aaron Scott Jr. committed over the weekend. He pulled out a Michigan bag and then pulled a Ohio State hat out of the bag. Mm. And not too much surprise, the Buckeyes went with the Buckeye. They almost always get their guys in the state. But, yeah, and a little added snap there, Pat, or does it really matter? This you want toxicity. It's this rivalry.
Yeah. No, I like the extra panache there. I mean, yeah. You know, not necessary, maybe, but they, you know, a good bit of theater. If you want to rile up your Buckeye faithful, that's a good way to do it. Pull out the Michigan bag and then throw it on the ground and put on your Ohio State hat. That's good. And I will say just quickly, from Big Ten media days, it was, as usual, it is so funny listening to reporters that cover Michigan and Ohio State ask the other people, like the Ohio State reporters asking Jim Harbaugh questions or the Michigan reporters asking Ryan Day questions. And you can see that they're like, they got like 9 stories planned on where's the rivalry? Has Michigan gotten the upper hand? What does Ohio State do? Where do they stand? And like the Ohio State people really wanted to seize on Harbaugh adding a beat Georgia period to their practice regime, because they've always had a beat Ohio State period. And now it's like, wait a minute, have you disregarded Ohio State? Is it what about Georgia now? Yeah, no, but they have both. They still have the beat Ohio State period, but now they also have a beat Georgia period. So rest assured, they are not overconfident in Ann Arbor. There's your storyline.
Forget about Ohio State. I love Georgia. I always find that thing stupid where they like they can't ever admit. I think Ryan Day said it. We think about our rival, our rival. They don't, you know, call each other their name or whatever.
It's so silly.
Well, I think. Somebody used to call it Ohio.
Is it, oh, yeah.
What, somebody called it Ohio, not Ohio State. I can't
remember. Was it Brady Hoke?
Might have been Brady Hoke, yeah. And then the team up north, and then they cancel it. They cross out all the M's. It's like, okay, we think about them every single day, 365 days a year. We're like, really? I don't believe you. I believe that if one day you get off, okay.
One day you go to Lake Uncle Boji to water ski, and maybe you don't think about the team up north or whatever.
Yeah, spend one day, not like really. What exactly on May 13th is going to happen that's going to help you win the game? You know what got you? Donovan Edwards broke loose a couple times. Like, I don't think you were solving that problem. Anyway, Ohio State is going to have higher rated recruits and talent than Michigan. They're beating them in recruiting. Michigan's recruiting very well. Jim Harbaugh, I will never doubt Jim Harbaugh will put a winner together. Gets it done. So, but they're winning that recruiting battle right now. And obviously fighting on Ohio's turf is not, but yeah, whatever. Forget about me. I love you. I'll tell you who's loving their in-state recruits right now is Auburn.
Yeah.
Auburn in the last week. DeMarcus Riddick, a very good recruit from Chilton County, Clanton, Alabama. Just an athlete. Always love those guys. Decommitted from Georgia, mainly because Georgia signed the rest of the top 100. Decommitted from Georgia, Alabama and Auburn both wanted him. Everyone wanted him. He chose Auburn. Alabama usually has, in the past few years, has dominated in-state recruiting. And then just over the weekend, Perry Thompson of Foley, Alabama, five-star wide receiver, chose Auburn over Alabama. So in 1 week, you know, I don't think this is the don't worry, Alabama will get their players. But very, very good sign for Hugh Freeze and the Tigers. Hey, Ross?
Yeah. In fact, I saw somebody, I saw a tweet this morning or last night, or not a tweet, a Zeet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's an exit.
An exit? I don't know. Anyway, I saw where Hugh, he not only won these recruiting battles, but he had a big week at the golf course, too. And he won the Auburn Country Club tournament or something, invitation or tournament. He won, and he got a big one of the big wrestling belts, like the WWE belts they give you for a win. So he had that wrapped around him. So he was he had quite a week that Hugh Freeze. You know,
that's he won like a club championship. Supposedly, yes. Is this like one of Trump's ones?
Yeah.
Or like
as a club championship. Yeah, you Google it because it came up. But he won an Auburn University Club Championship tournament. Yeah, golf tournament. He golfs quite a bit and is obviously pretty good at it. But going back to Auburn in general.
Yeah, but a club championship, you got to be really good.
Put in a handicap of 42 or something.
Well, was it handicapped or what is this?
I don't know. I don't know the details. This is bothering me. I don't know. Yeah. Look it up.
Okay.
Look it up, Dan.
Wetzel deep dive coming.
The point is,
we're getting into this. The D-flight or something? Like, come on. How is Colton playing?
Sounds like an exclusive investigation coming about Hugh Freeze.
We're
going to
get into this. We'll find some toxicity on this. Toxicity on this scorecard.
The Tigers are rolling recruiting-wise. And it's something they didn't do very much right under their the previous coach. I think the biggest slight argument against Brian Harsin was that Auburn just wasn't landing these type of recruits under Brian Harsin in his in the recruiting there. So this is huge for them, and they've really, back in the fall, I think it really started late fall or so, but they've really amped up on the NIL as well. Auburn, I don't think a lot of people know this, but Auburn's first collective kind of folded like a year or so ago. So they had some real issues when it came to NIL. So they've corrected those things, and that combined with Hugh Freeze's personality and persistence with recruits, and there you go.
All right, I have details. Hold on. Actually, Pat, talk about the football if you'd like. Go ahead. I'm going to get to the golf. Okay.
I would just say that, look, Hugh Freeze is going to get guys, and he's probably going to coach him up well. So I think this is why Hugh Freeze got hired, and he's starting to pay some dividends for Auburn, and he will have the enthusiastic backing of all those crazy boosters as long as he continues to succeed in recruiting and eventually on the field.
Okay, so Hugh Freeze won the first flight, they're calling it. He's a 6.8 handicap. He's a very, very good golfer.
That's pretty good.
Very
good
golfer. Pretty good. Yes, he would defeat me on the course. He shot a 76 earlier this month. He shot an 81, 80, 78, 76. But, okay, so, there's flights, which is fine. But he did not win the club championship. If the best golfer at this club is a 6.8, then there's a windmill somewhere on the course. Okay.
I'm glad you got to the bottom of that.
Congrats to Coach Freeze. I'd be happy to come down and play golf with you sometime. But, Alabama's the school that makes up all the national titles. Auburn's big thing is they actually earn their titles. The greatest golf, though, was the Kim Jong Il, the dad. Yeah.
Did he ace every hole or something, right?
He claimed a 7,700-yard championship course in Pyongyang, which alone is okay. Okay.
And that stretches from there to China and maybe back.
So that's a pretty good distance. Yeah. He said he shot a 38 for 72 holes. He had 11 hole-in-ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
11 hole-in-ones and shot a 38. He did this at age 52. Must have had a hell of a short game. Although, really, the hole-in-ones, How do you have 11 hole-in-ones? He's acing all the par fours, too?
Well, especially when the course is that long. I mean,
yeah,
it's a good, really good point. These are not like a 241-yard par four.
No.
Downhill. The par
fours are 550.
Who do they think they're kidding? Do the people of North yes. Korea, do they believe this? They're like, oh,
yes.
Yeah.
He's yes.
A, I don't know. They're great they at believe. Golf. Yeah, he's acing 440-yard par fours.
He's 5'3". He was 5'3". I mean, the club speed must have been just enormous. At 5'3", to shoot a 38 on a 7,700-yard championship course?
I think you're just a hater, Dan. I think you need to accept the brilliance of dear leader.
Dear leader, I'm calling into question
like to
on
think,
that.
Hold on, Dan. I'd like to think that he had this round of golf, and while he's playing it, they're actually positioning the ball in a way to get him to shoot that score. Like, you know, the 440-yard par four, all of a sudden he's teeing off like 3 feet from the hole. You know, it's like, oh, 0-1, ace, there we go. Like, you know, I feel like, I wonder if they actually went to the extremes of like trying to actually make this happen. I hope that's what happened.
So they got the women's tees, the regular men's tees, yeah.
the leader's tees,
the government tees, 8 feet from the green. Yeah.
You putt from 3 feet, 11 yeah. hole-in-ones. Golf.com did a whole breakdown of it.
Did they?
Yeah, they said, we've done talking about Johnny Miller's closing 63 at Oakmont in 1973. Oh, this is the great, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's repeated enough. People believe it. Do they not? I'd love to talk to a real North Korean.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey, you buy that 38? Or like, let's do it. We got that match thing. We'll do the match, okay? The match will, you know, they go to Vegas and they have like Tom Brady and stuff from Mahomes. Mm-hmm. We'll have, well, this guy's dead. But if we can bring him back, what the hell? It's North Korea. Get him in your prime, Tiger, and Hugh Freeze. A three-way match. Anyway, congratulations to Coach Freeze, because I ain't winning that flight either. But maybe a few details in the tweet. You know, I would brag it up. He's got a nice championship belt there. Pretty good. Oh, yeah. But I was like, wait a minute. If this guy's like a plus two and coaching SEC football, I'm going to reevaluate all my thought processes.
I will say, at a 6.8 and the tan that he was sporting in Nashville, Coach, you might need to get in the film room a little bit more.
Very good golf. It's very good golfer. Taking nothing from the 6'8". All right. Do we have something else? I can't remember. Oh, I got this one. All right, well, let me get this one quick, Pat. Ohio State's Cade Stover was talking NIL. The senior is the John Mackey Award finalist at Big Ten Media Day. He's from a farm in Mansfield, Ohio. He said the simplest way for him to be compensated for NIL, money-wise, I don't know. I'd rather be paid in tractors, to be honest with you.
Epic line.
That is a Big Ten lineman. I mean, that is just Big Ten lineman.
Perfect.
That I think the folklore is that Kentucky's offer back in the day to Kent Benson when he chose Indiana was going to be paid in tractors. It was from a farm family in Newcastle, Indiana. There's a lot of folklore around that recruitment. You want to go back to the 70s.
I think they used that to get, who was the kid in Blue Chips? Remember the movie Blue Tips?
Yeah.
They had the kid from French Lick.
Yes.
Something Rowe. I can't remember. Willie, what was it?
I don't remember.
Oh, God. One. Anyway, his dad got a tractor. He was the white guy, the white recruit.
Yeah.
Can't remember what it was. Yeah. Ricky Rowe. Matt Nover played Ricky Rowe.
Matt Nover
playing Ricky Rowe, and his dad asked for a tractor. So we got all that. All right, Pat, what did you have? You had some detail?
All I have is I've come up with my own acronym for the podcast. It's not FAMILD. I'm going with Fat Pilm. Forget about the pod. I love myself.
Forget about the pod. I hate you all. If I could get on a better pod, I would. That's
right. That's it.
That's it. How you feeling today, Pat?
Fat Pilm. That's how I'm feeling.
No, you're supposed to say I'm elite. I'm elite.
I'm not. I'm angry.
We're taking down Barstool. Taking down Bill Simmons. I feel elite. I need you guys to rally here. Come on.
Slow
work on that.
Pardon my take. We're elite over here.
We're coming
every
after
day. We're going to have a segment in the pod.
When we start the pod. We're going to start clapping when we start the pod.
Yeah, time. Right. We're going to be like Harbaugh, right? We got a Georgia right. segment. We're going to have a pardon my take segment. How do we take
there
that?
You go. Yeah, how do we go get them?
I have no idea. Any thoughts? All right. Probably come up with a better show than this.
That would help. We need an otter update. You know.
And no otter updates.
Fat Bear Week, something.
Yeah, well, this is what we got. This is all we got. But we'll be back with more. We'll get more. We'll try again later this week. So could be a wild one. Buckle up. We will appreciate everyone listening. Last one, I think, of July. August is our membership drive month.
There you go.
Tell a friend to tell a friend. But we'll hammer you on that. And but we appreciate everyone listening. Continue to share us on social media and subscribe and leave us nice reviews and all those things. And we will talk to you later.